Great to see you, Pete. Mr. Ricker was wearing a paisley shirt with billowy sleeves today, along with a psychedelic tie. Pete thought the combination said quite a lot about why the Love and Peace generation had collapsed. Mrs. Davis says great things about you.
She's cool, Pete said. I'm learning a lot.
Actually, he wasn't, and he didn't think anyone else in her class was either. She was nice enough, and quite often had interesting things to say, but Pete was coming to the conclusion that creative writing couldn't really be taught, only learned.
What can I do for you?
Remember when you were talking about how valuable a handwritten Shakespeare manuscript would be? Mr. Ricker grinned. I always talk about that during a midweek class when things get dozy. There's nothing like a little avarice to perk kids up.
Why? Have you found a folio, Malvolio?
Pete smiled politely.
No. But when we were visiting my Uncle Phil in Cleveland during February vacation, I went out to his garage and found a whole bunch of old books. Most of them were about Tom Swift. He was this kid inventor.
I remember Tom and his friend Ned Newton well, Mr. Ricker said. Tom Swift and his motorcycle. Tom Swift and his wizard camera. When I was a kid myself, we used to joke about Tom Swift and his electric grandmother.
Pete renewed his polite smile.
There were also a dozen or so about a girl detective named Trixie Belden and another one named Nancy Drew.
I believe I see where you're going with this, and I hate to disappoint you, but I must. Tom Swift, Nancy Drew, the Hardy Boys, Trixie Belden, all interesting relics of a bygone age and a wonderful yardstick to judge how much what is called YA fiction has changed in the last 80 years or so. But those books have little or no monetary value, even when found in excellent condition.
I know, Pete said. I checked it out later on Fine Books. That's a blog. But while I was looking those books over, Uncle Phil came out to the garage and said he had something else that might interest me even more, because I told him I was into John Rothstein. It was a signed hardback of The Runner. Not dedicated, just a flat signature. Uncle Phil said some guy named Al gave it to him because he owed my uncle $10 from a poker game. Uncle Phil said he'd had it for almost 50 years. I looked at the copyright page, and it's a first edition. Mr. Ricker had been rocked back in his chair, but now he sat down with a bang.
Whoa! You probably know that Rothstein didn't sign many autographs, right?
Yeah, Pete said. He called it defacing a perfectly good book.
Uh-huh.
He was like Raymond Chandler that way. And you know signed volumes are worth more when it's just the signature?
Sans dedication?
Yes, it says so on Fine Books.
A signed first of Rothstein's most famous book probably would be worth money, Mr. Ricker considered. On second thought, strike the probably.
What kind of condition is it in?
Good, Pete said promptly. Some foxing on the inside cover and title page is all.
You have been reading up on this stuff.
More since my uncle showed me the Rothstein.
I don't suppose you're in possession of this fabulous book, are you?
I've got something a lot better, Pete thought, if you only knew. Sometimes he felt the weight of that knowledge, and never more than today telling these lies. Necessary lies, he reminded himself.
I don't, but my uncle said he'd give it to me if I wanted it. I said I needed to think about it because he doesn't, you know.
He doesn't have any idea how much it might really be worth?
Yeah, but then I started wondering.
What?
Pete dug into his back pocket, took out a folded sheet of paper, and handed it to Mr. Ricker.
I went looking on the internet for book dealers here in town that buy and sell first editions, and I found these three. I know you're sort of a book collector yourself.
Not much. I can't afford serious collecting on my salary, but I've got a signed Theodore Retke that I intend to hand down to my children. The Waking. Very fine poems. Also a Vonnegut, but that's not worth so much. Unlike Rothstein, Father Kurt signed everything.
Anyway, I wondered if you knew any of these, and if you do, which one might be the best, if I decided to let him give me the book, and then, you know, sell it.
Mr. Ricker unfolded the sheet, glanced at it, then looked at Pete again. That gaze, both keen and sympathetic, made Pete feel uneasy. This might have been a bad idea. He really wasn't much good at fiction, but he was in it now and would have to plow through somehow. As it happens, I know all of them. But geez, kiddo, I also know how much Rothstein means to you, and not just from your paper last year. Annie Davis says you bring him up often in creative writing, claims the Gold Trilogy is your Bible. Pete supposed this was true, but he hadn't realized how blabby he'd been until now. He resolved to stop talking about Rothstein so much. It might be dangerous. People might think back and remember if... It's good to have literary heroes, Pete, especially if you plan to major in English when you get to college. Rothstein is yours, at least for now, and that book could be the beginning of your own library. Are you sure you want to sell it? Pete could answer this question with fair honesty, even though it wasn't really a signed book he was talking about. Pretty sure, yeah. Things have been a little tough at home. I know what happened to your father at City Center, and I'm sorry as hell. At least they caught the psycho before he could do any more damage. Dad's better now, and both he and my mom are working again. Only I'm probably going to need money for college, see? I understand. But that's not the biggest thing, at least not now. My sister wants to go to Chapel Ridge, and my parents told her she couldn't, at least not this coming year. They can't quite swing it. Close, but no cigar. And I think she needs a place like that. She's kind of, I don't know, lagging. Mr. Ricker, who had undoubtedly known lots of students who were lagging, nodded gravely. But if Tina could get in with a bunch of strivers, especially this one girl, Barbara Robinson, she used to know from when we lived on the West Side, things might turn around. It's good of you to think of her future, Pete. Noble, even. Pete had never thought of himself as noble. The idea made him blink. Perhaps seeing his embarrassment, Mr. Ricker turned his attention to the list again. Okay. Grissom Books would have been your best bet when Teddy Grissom was still alive, but his son runs the shop now, and he's a bit of a tightwad. Honest, but close with a buck. He'd say it's the times, but it's also his nature. Okay. I assume you've checked on the net to find out how much a signed first edition runner in good condition is valued at? Yeah, 2 or 3,000. Not enough for a year at Chapel Ridge, but a start. What my dad calls earnest money. Mr. Ricker nodded. That sounds about right. Teddy Jr. would start you at 800. You might get him up to a grand, but if you kept pushing, he'd get his back up and tell you to take a hike. This next one, Buy the Book, is Buddy Franklin's shop. He's also okay, by which I mean honest, but Buddy doesn't have much interest in 20th century fiction. His big deal is selling old maps and 17th century atlases to rich guys in Branson Park and Sugar Heights. But if you could talk Buddy into valuing the book, then go to Teddy Jr. at Grissom, you might get 1,200. I'm not saying you would, I'm just saying it's possible. What about Andrew Halliday rare editions? Mr. Ricker frowned. I'd steer clear of Halliday. He's got a little shop on Lacemaker Lane and that walking mall off Lower Main Street. Not much wider than an Amtrak car, but damn near a block long. Seems to do quite well, but there's an odor about him. I've heard it said he's not too picky about the provenance of certain items. Do you know what that is? The line of ownership. Right. Ending with a piece of paper that says you legally own what you're trying to sell. The only thing I know for sure is that about 15 years ago, Halliday sold a proof copy of James Agee's Let Us Now Praise Famous Men, and it turned out to have been stolen from the estate of Brooke Astor. She was a rich old biddy from New York with a larcenous business manager. Halliday showed a receipt, and his story of how he came by the book was credible, so the investigation was dropped. But receipts can be forged, you know. I'd steer clear of him. Thanks, Mr. Ricker, Pete said, thinking that if he went ahead with this, Andrew Halliday Rare Editions would be his first stop. But he would have to be very, very careful. And if Mr. Halliday wouldn't do a cash deal, that would mean no deal. Plus, under no circumstances could he know Pete's name. A disguise might be in order, although it wouldn't do to go overboard on that.
You're welcome, Pete. But if I said I felt good about this, I'd be lying.
Pete could relate. He didn't feel so good about it himself.
He was still mulling his options a month later, and had almost come to the conclusion that trying to sell even one of the notebooks would be too much risk for too little reward. If it went to a private collector, like the ones he had sometimes read about, who bought valuable paintings to hang in secret rooms where only they could look at them, it would be okay, but he couldn't be sure that would happen. He was leaning more and more to the idea of donating them anonymously, maybe mailing them to the New York University Library. The curator of a place like that would understand the value of them, no doubt. But doing that would be a little more public than Pete liked to think about, not at all like dropping the letters with the money inside them into anonymous street corner mailboxes. What if someone remembered him at the post office? Then on a rainy night in late April of 2014, Tina came to his room again. Mrs. Beasley was long gone, and the footy pajamas had been replaced by an oversized Cleveland Browns football jersey, but to Pete, she looked very much like the worried girl who had asked during the era of bad feelings if their mother and father were going to get divorced. Her hair was in pigtails, and with her face cleansed of the little makeup Mom let her wear, Pete had an idea she put on fresh layers when she got to school, she looked closer to 10 than going on 13. He thought, teens is almost a teen. It was hard to believe.
Can I come in for a minute?
Sure. He was lying on his bed reading a novel by Philip Roth called When She Was Good. Tina sat on his desk chair, pulling her jersey nightshirt down over her shins and blowing a few errant hairs from her forehead where a faint scattering of acne had appeared.
Something on your mind? Pete asked.
Yeah. But she didn't go on. He wrinkled his nose at her.
Go on. Spill it.
Some boy you've been crushing on told you to buzz off?
You sent that money, she said, didn't you?
Pete stared at her, flabbergasted. He tried to speak and couldn't. He tried to persuade himself she hadn't said what she'd said and couldn't do that either. She nodded as if he had admitted it.
Yeah, you did. It's all over your face.
It didn't come from me, teens. You just took me by surprise. Where would I get money like that?
I don't know, but I remember the night you asked me what I'd do if I found a buried treasure.
I did? Thinking, you were half asleep. You can't remember that.
Doubloons, you said. Coins from olden days. I said I'd give it to Dad and Mom so they wouldn't fight anymore, and that's just what you did. Only it wasn't pirate treasure. It was regular money.
Pete put his book aside. Don't you go telling them that. They might actually believe you. She looked at him solemnly.
I never would, but I need to ask you, is it really all gone?
The note in the last envelope said it was, Pete replied cautiously. And there hasn't been any more since, so I guess so.
She sighed. Yeah, what I figured, but I had to ask.
She got up to go.
Tina? What?
I'm really sorry about Chapel Ridge and all. I wish the money wasn't gone.
She sat down again. I'll keep your secret if you keep one Mom and I have, okay?
Okay.
Last November, she took me to Chap. That's what the girls call it for one of their tour days. She didn't want Dad to know because she thought he'd be mad. But back then, she thought they maybe could afford it, especially if I got a need scholarship. Do you know what that is?
Pete nodded.
Only the money hadn't stopped coming then, and it was before all the snow and weird cold weather in December and January. We saw some of the classrooms and the science labs. There's like a jillion computers. We also saw the gym, which is humongous, and the showers. They have private changing booths too, not just cattle stalls like at Northfield. At least they do for the girls. Guess who my tour group had for a guide?
Barbara Robinson.
She smiled. It was great to see her again.
Then the smile faded.
She said hello and gave me a hug and asked how everyone was, but I could tell she hardly remembered me. Why would she, right? Did you know her and Hilda and Betsy and a couple of other girls from back then were at the Round Here concert?
The one the guy who ran over Dad tried to blow up?
Yeah. Pete also knew that Barbara Robinson's big brother had played a part in saving Barbara and Barbara's friends and maybe thousands of others. He'd gotten a medal or a key to the city or something. That was real heroism, not sneaking around and mailing stolen money to your parents.
Did you know I was invited to go with them that night?
What? No.
Tina nodded. I said I couldn't because I was sick, but I wasn't. It was because Mom said they couldn't afford to buy me a ticket. We moved a couple of months later.
Jesus, how about that, huh?
Yeah, I missed all the excitement.
So, how was the school tour?
Good, but not great or anything. I'll be fine at Northfield. Hey, once they find out I'm your sister, they'll probably give me a free ride, honor roll boy.
Pete suddenly felt sad, almost like crying. It was the sweetness that had always been part of Tina's nature, combined with that ugly scatter of pimples on her forehead. He wondered if she got teased about those. If she didn't yet, she would. He held out his arms. Come here. She did, and he gave her a strong hug. Then he held her by the shoulders and looked at her sternly. But that money, it wasn't me.
Uh-huh. Okay. So was that notebook you were reading stuck in with the money?
I bet it was. She giggled.
You looked so guilty that night when I walked in on you.
He rolled his eyes. Go to bed, short stuff.
Okay.
At the door, she turned back.
I like those private changing booths, though. And something else. Want to know? You'll think it's weird.
Go ahead, lay it on me.
The kids wear uniforms. For the girls, it's gray skirts with white blouses and white knee socks. There are also sweaters, if you want. Some gray like the skirts and some this pretty dark red. Hunter red, they call it, Barbara said.
Uniforms, Pete said, bemused. You like the idea of uniforms?
Knew you'd think it was weird, because boys don't know how girls are. Girls can be mean if you're wearing the wrong clothes, or even if you wear the right ones too much. You can wear different blouses or your sneakers on Tuesdays and Thursdays. You can do different things with your hair, but pretty soon they, the mean girls, figure out you've only got 3 jumpers and 6 good school skirts. Then they say stuff. But when everyone wears the same thing every day, except maybe the sweater's a different color,
she blew back those few errant strands again.
Boys don't have the same problem.
I actually do get it, Pete said.
Anyway, Mom's going to teach me how to make my own clothes, then I'll have more. Simplicity. Butterick. Also, I've got friends. Plenty of them.
Ellen, for instance.
Ellen's okay.
And headed for a rewarding job as a waitress or a drive-through girl after high school, Pete thought, but did not say. If she doesn't get pregnant at 16, that is.
I just wanted to tell you not to worry if you were.
I wasn't, Pete said. I know you'll be fine. And it wasn't me who sent the money. Honest. She gave him a smile, both sad and complicit, that made her look like anything but a little girl.
Okay, gotcha.
She left, closing the door gently behind her. Pete lay awake for a long time that night. Not long after, he made the biggest mistake of his life.